Chapter 11. An Unexpected Letter.
"They can't possibly think I'll sign this," Elaine said, tossing the sheaf of papers onto the floor beside her chair.
"It's unlikely that they do," Dialin said. Her golden hair was pristine, her firm face controlled, her slim body poised. The woman was perfect. It was unfair that she should look so pristine, while Elaine felt like a sow, fattened up and ripe for the slaughter. The hearth in Elaine's sitting room crackled warmly. Wine sat in a pitcher on one of the wall's sideboards, but of course she wasn't allowed any of that. If one more person tried to offer her bloody goat's milk... Birgitta lounged near the far wall, golden braid hanging over her right shoulder, contrasting with her white-collared red coat and sky-blue trousers. She'd poured herself a cup of tea and smiled over it, amused by Elaine's annoyance. Elaine could feel the emotion through the bond. They were the only ones in the room. Elaine had retired to the sitting room after accepting the proposal from Alorian's messenger, explaining that she would like to consider the offer in private. Well, she'd consider it. Consider it trash. For that was all it was. "This is an insult," she said, sweeping her hand toward the pages.
"Do you intend to keep them imprisoned forever, Elaine?" Dialin asked, raising an eyebrow. "They can't afford to pay a ransom, not after what they spent funding their succession bid. That leaves you with a decision."
"They can rot," Elaine said, folding her arms. "They raised armies against me and besieged Camelin."
"Yes," Dialin said flatly. "I believe I was there." Elaine cursed softly to herself, then stood up and began to pace. Birgitta eyed her. They both knew that Melfane had suggested that Elaine avoid taxing herself. Elaine met the warder's eyes stubbornly, then continued her pacing. Burn her, and burn that bloody midwife. Walking wasn't taxing. Elorian was one of the last vocal holdouts to Elaine's rule, and was the most problematic, save perhaps for Jared Sarand. These months marked the beginning of a long period of testing for Elaine. How would she stand on certain issues? How easily would she be pushed? How much did she take after her mother? They should know that she wouldn't be easily intimidated, but the unfortunate truth was that she stood atop a precarious perch made of teacups stacked high. Each of those cups was an Andoran house. Some had supported her willingly, others grudgingly. Very few of them were as sturdy as she would have liked. "The captive nobles are a resource," Elaine said. "They should be viewed as such." Dialin nodded. The noblewoman had a way of goading Elaine, forcing her to stretch for the answers they both knew she needed to find.
"A resource is meaningless unless eventually expended," Dialin noted. She held a cup of wine. "Blasted woman."
"Yes," Elaine said. "But to sell a resource short would be to establish a reputation for carelessness."
"Unless you sell something just before its value plummets," Dialin said. "Many a merchant has been called foolish for trading ice peppers at a discount, only to be called wise when prices fall even further."
"And these captives? You see their value falling soon?"
"Their houses have been compromised," Dialin said. "The stronger your position becomes, Elaine, the less valuable these political captives grow. You shouldn't squander the advantage, but neither should you lock it away until nobody cares anymore."
"You could execute them," Birgitta said. They both stared at her.
"What?" Birgitta said. "It's what they deserve, and it would establish a hard-fisted reputation."
"It's not right," Elaine said. "They should not be killed for supporting someone else for the throne. There can be no treason where there is no queen."
"So our soldiers can die, but the nobles bloody walk away?" Birgitta asked.
Then she raised a hand before Elaine could protest.
"Spare the lecture, Elaine.
I understand. I don't agree, but I understand. It's always been this way. Elaine returned to her pacing. She did stop, however, to stomp on Alorian's proposal as she passed it. That earned her an eye roll from Birgitta, but it felt good. The proposal was a list of empty promises that concluded with a demand that Elaine release the captives for the good of Andor. Elorian claimed that since the captives had no funds, the Crown should pardon them and release them to help rebuild. Truth be told, Elaine had been considering doing so. But now if she released them, the three would see Elorian as their savior. Any gratitude that Elaine could have gained would instead be given to her rival. Blood and bloody ashes. The Windfinders are beginning to ask after the land you promised them, Dailin noted. Already? The older woman nodded. The request still troubles me. Why do they want a sliver of land like that? They earned it, Elaine said. Perhaps. Though this does mean that you're the first queen in 5 generations to cede a portion of Andor, no matter how small, to a foreign entity. Elaine took a deep breath, and oddly found herself calmer. Blasted mood swings! Hadn't Melfane promised that these would grow less pronounced as the pregnancy progressed? Yet at times she still felt her emotions bouncing around like a ball in a children's game. Elaine composed herself and sat. I cannot allow this. The houses are all looking for opportunities to shoulder their way into power. You would be doing the same in their place, I warrant, Dailin said. Not if I knew that the last battle was approaching, Elaine snapped. We need to do something to direct the nobles toward more important matters, something to unify them behind me, or at least convince them that I'm not to be toyed with. And you have a means of achieving this? Dailin asked. Yes, Elaine said, glancing eastward. It's time to seize Cairhien. Birgitta choked quietly on her tea. Dailin merely raised an eyebrow. A bold move. Bold? Birgitta asked, wiping her chin. It's bloody insane. Elaine, you barely have your fingers on Andor. That makes the timing even better, Elaine said. We have momentum. Besides, if we move for Cairhien now, it will show that I mean to be more than a simpering puff of a queen. I doubt anyone expects that of you, Birgitta said. If they do, they probably took one too many knocks to the head during the fighting. She's right. However uncouth the presentation, Dailin agreed. She glanced at Birgitta, and Elaine could feel a stab of dislike through Birgitta's bond. Light. What would it take to make the two of them get along? Nobody doubts your strength as a queen, Elaine. That won't stop the others from seizing what power they can. They know they're unlikely to be able to get it later. I don't have 15 years to stabilize my rule, like Mother, Elaine said. Look, we all know what Rand kept saying about me taking the Sun Throne. A steward rules there now, waiting for me, and after what happened to Cola Vair, nobody dares disobey Rand's edicts. By taking that throne, Dailin said, you risk looking as if you're letting Althor hand it to you. So, Elaine said, I had to take Andor on my own, but there is nothing wrong with me accepting his gift of Cairhien. His Aiel were the ones to liberate it. We'd be doing the Cairhienin a favor by preventing a messy succession. My claim to the throne is strong, at least as strong as anyone else's, and those loyal to Rand will fall behind me. And do you not risk overextending yourself? Possibly, Elaine said, but I think it's worth the risk. In one step, I could become one of the most powerful monarchs since Arthur Hawkwing. Further argument was cut off by a polite knock at the door. Elaine glanced at Dailin, and the woman's thoughtful expression meant she was considering what Elaine had said. Well, Elaine would strike for the Sun Throne, with or without Dialin's approval. The woman was becoming increasingly useful to Elaine as an advisor. Light be praised that Dialin hadn't wanted the throne herself. But a queen could not let herself fall into the trap of relying on any one person too much. Birgitta answered the door, letting in the stork-like Master Nori. He was dressed in red and white, his long face characteristically somber. He carried his leather folder under one arm, and Elaine suppressed a groan. I thought we were finished for the day.
I thought so as well, Your Majesty, he said. But several new matters have arisen. I thought that they might be, interesting to you.
What do you mean?
Well, Your Majesty, Nori said, you know that I am not particularly fond of certain types of work, but in light of recent additions to my staff, I have seen reason to expand my attentions.
You're talking about Hark, aren't you? Birgitta said. How's the worthless piece of grime doing?
Nori glanced at her.
He is, grimy, I should say.
He looked back at Elaine.
But he is rather adept once given proper motivation. Please forgive me if I have taken liberties, but after the encounters recently, and the guests to your dungeons they provided, I thought it wise.
What are you talking about, Master Nori? Elaine asked.
Mistress Bassaheen, Your Majesty, Nori said. The first instruction I gave our good Master Hark was to watch the Aes Sedai's place of residence, a certain inn known as the Greeting Hall.
Elaine sat upright, feeling a burst of excitement. Juhara Bashin had repeatedly attempted to gain audience with Elaine by bullying the various members of the palace staff. They all knew now, however, that she was not to be admitted. Aes Sedai or not, she was a representative of Elaida, and Elaine intended to have nothing to do with her.
You had her watched, Elaine said eagerly. Please tell me you discovered something I can use to banish that insufferable woman.
Then I am under no condemnation? Master Nori asked carefully, still as dry and unexcited as ever.
He was yet inexperienced when it came to spying. Light no, Elaine said. I should have ordered it done myself. You've saved me from that oversight, Master Nori. If what you've discovered is good enough news, I might just be likely to kiss you. That prompted a reaction. His eyes widened in horror. It was enough to make Elaine laugh, and Birgitta chuckled as well. Dialin didn't seem pleased. Well, she could go suck on a goat's foot for all Elaine cared.
Well, Nori said, that wouldn't be necessary, Your Majesty. I had thought that if there were dark friends pretending to be Aes Sedai in the city...
He, like the others, had learned not to refer to Phelion and the others as Aes Sedai in Elaine's presence.
We might want to keep good watch on any who purported to be from the White Tower.
Elaine nodded eagerly. My, but Nori could ramble.
I'm afraid I must disappoint Your Majesty, Nori said, obviously noting Elaine's excitement, if you are hoping for proof that this woman is a dark friend.
Oh.
However, Nori said, raising a slender finger, I have reason to believe that Juhara Sedai may have had a hand in the document you seem to be treating with, unusual reverence.
He glanced at the pages Elaine had tossed to the floor. One bore the distinct outline of her shoe.
Juhara has been meeting with a Lorian? Elaine asked.
Indeed she has, Master Nori said. The visits are growing more frequent. They are done with some measure of secrecy as well.
Elaine glanced at Dialin. Why does Juhara want my rivals freed? Dialin looked troubled. She couldn't be so foolish as to assume she can raise up a movement against you, particularly using a group of broken, bankrupt lords and ladies.
Your Majesty, Nori asked, if I may offer a comment.
Of course, Master Nori.
Perhaps the Aes Sedai is trying to curry favor with the Lady Elorian. We don't know for certain they conspired on this proposal. It simply seemed likely, judging from the frequency and timing of the Aes Sedai's visits. But she may not have reason to support her enemies so much as she has reason to be in the good graces of some of the city's nobility.
It was possible. Jihara wasn't likely to return to the White Tower, no matter how often Elaine suggested that she do so. To go back would be to present Elida with empty hands and a hostile Andor. No Aes Sedai would be so easily dissuaded. However, if she could return with the loyalty of some of the Andoran nobility, it would be something.
When Duhara left her inn to visit Elorian's home, Elaine said, how did she dress?
Though Elorian had briefly spoken of returning to her estates, she hadn't left, perhaps realizing that it wasn't politically useful as of yet. She resided in her mansion in Camelin at the moment.
In a cloak, Your Majesty, Nori said, with the hood drawn.
Rich or poor?
I don't know, Nori replied, sounding embarrassed. I could fetch Master Hark.
That won't be needed, Elaine said. But tell me, did she go alone?
No, I believe she always had a rather large contingent of attendants with her.
Elaine nodded. She was willing to bet that while Duhara wore a cloak and drawn hood, she left her great serpent ring on and chose a distinctively rich cloak for the subterfuge, along with taking attendance.
Master Nori, Elaine said, I fear that you've been played.
Your Majesty?
Dialin was nodding. She wanted to be seen visiting Elorian. She didn't want the visits to be official. That would put her too formally against your throne. But she wanted you to know what she was doing.
She's blatantly mingling with my enemies, Elaine said. It's a warning. She threatened me earlier, saying that I would not appreciate being in opposition to her and Elida.
Ah, Nori said, deflated. So my initiative wasn't so keen after all.
Oh, it was still valuable, Elaine said. If you hadn't had her watched, we'd have missed this, which would have been embarrassing. If someone is going to go out of her way to insult me, then I at least want to be aware of it, if only so that I know whom to behead later on.
Nori paled.
Figuratively, Master Nori, she said, as much as she'd like to do it. And Elida, too.
She dared send a watchdog to counsel Elaine?
Elaine shook her head.
Hurry up, Egwene. We need you in the tower. The world needs you there.
She sighed, turning back to Nori.
You said there were several new matters that needed my attention?
Indeed, Your Majesty, he said, getting out his horrible leather folder.
He removed a page from it, one he did not regard with nearly as much reverence as most he collected. Indeed, he pinched this one between two fingers and held it aloft, like a man picking up a dead animal found in the gutter.
You will recall your orders regarding mercenary bands?
Yes, she said, grimacing. She was getting thirsty. Gloomily, she eyed the cup of warm goat's milk on the table next to her chair. News of battle brought bands of sellswords, eager to offer their services. Unfortunately for most of the mercenaries, the siege had been a short one. News traveled fast, but weary and hungry soldiers traveled slowly. Soldier bands continued to arrive at the city in a steady flow, the men in them disappointed to find no need for their weapons. Elaine had begun by sending them away. Then she'd realized the foolishness in this. Every man would be needed at Tarmon Gaiden, and if Andor could provide an extra 5 or 10,000 soldiers to the conflict, she wanted to do so. She didn't have the coin to pay them now, but neither did she want to lose them.
So instead she had ordered Master Nori and Captain Guy Bond to give all of the mercenary bands the same instructions. They were to allow no more than a certain number of soldiers into Camelin at a time, and they were to camp no closer than 1 league from the city. This was to leave them with the idea that she'd meet with them eventually and offer them work. She just might do that, now that she had decided to take the Sun Throne. Of course, the last sellswords she'd hired had gone rotten on her more often than not. Against her better judgment, she picked up the cup of milk and took a sip. Birgitta nodded in satisfaction, but Elaine grimaced. Better to go thirsty.
"Well," Master Nori said, looking over the page in his fingers, "one of the mercenary captains has taken it upon himself to send you a very familiar letter. I wouldn't have brought it to you, but upon second reading it seems that it is something you should see. The ruffian's claims are outlandish, but I would not like to have been the one to ignore them should they prove, accurate."
Curious, Elaine reached for the paper. Outlandish claims? She didn't know any mercenary captains. The scrawl on the page was uneven. There were numerous crossed-out words, and some of the spelling was creative. Whoever this man was, she blinked in surprise as she reached the bottom of the letter. Then she read it again. "Your royal bloody pain in my back. We're bloody waiting here to talk to you, and we're getting angry perturbed." That means angry. "Tom says that you're a queen now, but I figure that changes nothing, since you acted like a queen all the time anyway. Don't forget that I carried hauled your pretty little backside out of a hole in Tyr, but you acted like a queen then, so I guess I don't know why I'm surprised now that you act like one when you really are a queen. So I'm thinking I should treat you like a bloody queen and send you a bloody letter and all, speaking with high talk and getting your attention. I even used my ring as a signet like it was a praeper proper. So here is my formal salutation. So bloody stop turning me away so we can talk. I need your bell founders. It's bloody important. Matt. P.S. Salutation means greeting. P.P.S. Don't mind the scratched out words and bad spellings. I was going to rewrite this letter, but Tom is laughing so hard at me that I want to be done. P.P.S. Don't mind me calling your backside pretty. I hardly ever spent any time looking at it, as I've an awareness that you'd pull my eyes out if you saw me. Besides, I'm married now, so that all doesn't matter." Elaine couldn't decide whether to be outraged or exuberant. Matt was in Andor, and Tom was alive. They'd escaped Ebu Dar. Had they found Alver? How had they gotten away from the Seanchan? So many emotions and questions welled up in her. Birgitta stood upright, frowning, feeling the emotions. "Elaine, what is it? Did the man insult you?" Elaine found herself nodding, tears forming in her eyes. Birgitta cursed, striding over. Master Nori looked taken aback, as if regretting that he'd brought the letter. Elaine burst into laughter. Birgitta froze. "Elaine?" "I'm all right," Elaine said, wiping the tears from her eyes and forcing herself to take a deep breath. "Oh, light! I needed that. Here, read it." Birgitta snatched the letter, and as she read, her face lightened. She chuckled. "You have a nice backside. He should be talking. Matt's got as fine a rump as comes on a man."
"Birgitta," Elaine said.
"Well, it's true," the warder said, handing back the letter. "I find his face far too pretty, but that doesn't mean I can't judge a good backside when I see one.
Light, it will be good to have him back. Finally, someone I can go drinking with who doesn't look at me as their bloody military superior."
"Contain yourself, Birgitta," Elaine said, folding the letter up. Nori looked scandalized by the exchange. Dialin said nothing. It took a lot to phase that woman, and she'd heard worse from Birgitta. You did well, Master Norri, Elaine said. Thank you for bringing this to my attention.
You do indeed know these mercenaries, then? He asked, a hint of surprise sounding in his voice.
They're not mercenaries. Actually, I'm not certain what they are. Friends and allies, I should hope. Why had Matt brought the band of the Red Hand to Andor? Were they loyal to Rand? Could she make use of them?
Matt was a scoundrel, but he had a strangely good eye for tactics in warfare. A soldier under his command would be worth 10 of the sellsword riffraff she'd been forced to hire recently.
My pardon, Your Majesty, for my mistake, Norri said. I should have brought this to you sooner. My informants told me that this group was recently in the employ of the Crown of Murundi, so I discounted their leader's insistence that he wasn't a mercenary.
You did well, Master Norri, Elaine said, still feeling amused and insulted. It was odd how often one moved between those two emotions when Muttrim Cawthon was involved. Light knows I've been busy enough. But please, if someone claims to know me personally, at least bring it to Birgitta's attention.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Arrange a meeting with Master Cawthon, she said, idly wishing she had time to write him back a letter as insulting as the one he'd written her. Tell him he must bring Tom with him to keep him in line.
As you wish, Your Majesty, Norri said with a characteristically stiff bow. If I may withdraw.
She nodded in thanks and he left, pulling the door closed. Elaine held Matt's letter idly between two fingers. Could she use Matt somehow to help her with the troubles Elorian was making, as she'd used the Borderlanders? Or was that too obvious?
Why did he mention Bellfounders, do you think? Birgitta asked.
It could be something as simple as needing a new bell to ring the hour for his camp.
But you don't think it's simple.
Matt's involved, Elaine said. He has a way of complicating things, and the way he wrote that line makes it smell like one of his schemes.
True. And if he merely wanted a bell, he could win himself enough to buy it after an hour dicing.
Come now, Elaine said. He's not that lucky.
Birgitta snorted into her tea. You need to pay better attention, Elaine. That man could dice with the Dark One and win.
Elaine shook her head. Soldiers, Birgitta included, could be such a superstitious lot. Make certain to have a few extra guards women on duty when Matt comes. He can be exuberant, and I wouldn't want him to make a scene.
Who is this man? Dailin asked, sounding confused. One of the other two Ta'veren who grew up with Rand Al'Thor, Birgitta said, gulping down her tea. She'd given up drinking while Elaine was pregnant. At least someone else had to suffer, too.
Matt is a particularly dynamic individual, Elaine said. He can be very useful when properly harnessed. When he is not, which is most of the time, he can be an outright disaster. But whatever else can be said about the man, he and his band know how to fight.
You're going to use them, aren't you? Birgitta said, eyeing her appreciatively.
Of course, Elaine said. And from what I remember Matt saying, he has a lot of Kyrianin in the band. They are native sons. If I arrive with that section of the band as part of my army, perhaps the transition will be easier.
So you really do intend to go through with this? Dailin asked. Taking the Sun Throne? Now?
The world needs unity, Elaine said, standing. With Kyrian I begin knitting us all together. Rand already controls Ilian and Tyr, and has bonds to the Aiel. We're all connected. She glanced to the west, where she could feel that knot of emotions that was Rand. The only thing she ever sensed from him these days was a cold anger buried deeply. Was he an Arad Doman? Elaine loved him, but she didn't intend to see Andor become merely another part of the Dragon's Empire. Besides, if Rand were to die at Shaol Ghul, who would rule that empire? It could break up. But she worried that someone, Darlin perhaps, would be strong enough to hold it together. If so, Andor would stand alone between an aggressive Shan-Chan empire to the southwest, Rand's successor to the northwest and the southeast, and the Borderlanders united together in the north and northeast. She could not let that happen. The woman in her cringed to think of planning for Rand's death, but the queen could not be so squeamish. The world was changing. "I realize it will be difficult to administer two nations," Elaine said. "But I must hold Kyrian, for the good of both thrones." She turned and met Dialin's eyes, and the older woman nodded slowly. "It seems you are committed."
"I am," Elaine said. "But I feel I'm going to need reliable use of traveling if I'm going to manage it.
Let's set up a meeting for me with Sumiko and Elise. We need to discuss the future of the kin."